the dark days are done, and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true, I love you.
Our next guest is one of those rare talents who has something to say and can say it funny. He's a writer-performer on the new Laugh-In and one of the most popular, outspoken, and entertaining personalities on the local news here in Los Angeles. He's won a half a dozen Emmys as a film critic and host of his own shows. Let's welcome Mr. John Barber, right over there.
Hi, this is John Barber. That was first the singing voice of Sarita, and second, the great speaking voice Frank Sinatra when he hosted The Tonight Show and had me on as one of his guests. It's January 25th from Las Vegas. It's John Barber's world. I must tell you, folks, if anger is the fountain of youth, America's the most perfect place to live. As you all know from Saturday Night Live, Sarah Palin has endorsed Donald Trump, which is a little like Bernie Madoff recommending a stock. Let me tell you, honestly, there are only two Donalds in America I admire, and they have the last names of Jeffries and Duck. And also, let me remind you of the truth of what Mark Twain said 100 years ago, quote, "If voting made a difference, they wouldn't let us do it," unquote. During this campaign of idiot's delight, our media and pundits have made two dreadful errors. First with Trump, then with Bernie Sanders. They gave Trump endless airtime because they thought it was sending the clowns higher ratings with this entertainer. The mistake they made was underestimating his appeal to a nation that is truly pissed off with politics as usual, and now they don't know how to stop him. The mistake they made with Bernie was trying to keep his presence a secret, which they did for months. Roger Ailes, president of Fox, and the fellow who was going to produce my talk show years ago at Westinghouse, said, quote, "It is not what you put on the news that makes a difference in America. It's what you don't put on the news." They did not want to put Bernie the socialist on camera. They didn't want any more socialist-initiated changes that benefited ordinary Americans like Social Security and Medicare and Glass-Steagall and others implemented by Roosevelt during the Great Depression to save capitalism, which did not succeed because now it's destroying ourselves and they're eating themselves. But Bernie's overwhelming crowds and his platform, he is the only candidate who talks about real issues. Because of the erupting size of his crowds, he has become news that could not be avoided. And while I'm not voting, because years ago Jack Parr said it for me, he says, "I don't vote because it just encourages him." But I'm going to tell you, if Bernie Sanders picks Liz Warren, not even a resurrected John Kennedy can beat them. And the 1% owners of our country, scared out of their wits and their wealth, cannot off both of them. Otherwise, the outraged 99% of us would be on the streets as in 1968, and our population would be reduced to 99%. Two quick comments. One about the upcoming Oscars, and the other about the weather back east. Multimillionaire actor-producer Will Smith was on television for days every morning whining about the lack of black faces in the Oscar nominations for performers and whining that not enough blacks were in the white offices deciding on which films to make. I wish I had been the host of one of those shows because my first question to Will or Oprah or Spike Lee or Denzel Washington would be, you folks are multimillionaires and you have your own production companies, so let me ask you a question. How is your movie coming along about Paul Robeson? You know, the greatest black performer and social activist who ever lived in this country? And you know what they would say? They'd say, well, we're not making a movie about him. Then I'd ask them, well, you revere Dr. Martin Luther King. You're talking about him all the time. You quote him all the time. How is your movie about Coretta King's successful lawsuit against the FBI and the government for their conspiring to kill her husband? And they would all say, well, we're not making a movie about that. And I would say, well, shut up. Until you put your millions where your mouth is, just shut up. And you know, for the more than 30 years that I earned a really good living in show business, my mentor and only friend all that time was Red Fox. And he always said to these people, the ones that I just mentioned, even then they said, John, they are just house niggers. And in black entertainment television, they have an award show every year. How many Caucasians do they nominate in their show? Absolutely none. And what would it look like if it were just a white Oscar show? So just shut up. Now for the weather. Jesus, what a terrible segue. The East Coast of America has been devastated by a storm resulting in 25 deaths, but a coming together of people to help one another survive nature's dreadful destruction. But what saddens me is knowing in my heart that when that snow melts and they get back to their jobs, that if somebody does not halt America's foreign policy insanity over Iran, these same people will now congregate and join forces behind some imperialist and rain destruction and death all over the Middle East in another man-made, unnatural disaster. Wonderfully and mercifully, America still produces people who speak up against this insanity. My guest is one of these rare individuals, and he has done it all his professional life. One of the brightest, most socially active politicians in and out of government, trying to halt that insanity and creating a saner society. Born in Massachusetts, of French-Canadian parents, he drove a cab, worked on a railway, 3 years in military intelligence, became a member of the Alaska State Legislature, and as U.S. Senator, the first one to speak up against the Iraq War before it happened. He became one of our nation's greatest senators. He single-handedly halted the military draft and was the internet's most popular presidential candidate in his Green Party presidential bid for the presidency, author of two terrific books, Kingmaker and Now Citizen Power. Not only one of the smartest politicians I know, but one of the bravest men I know, former senator from Alaska, Mike Gravel. Mike, it is such an honor to have you here.
Thank you very much, John. And I just really enjoyed your tirade, which is what I'd call it, because it was so accurate leading up to the beginning of this program. Just tremendous. I'm honored to be on your program.
Well, thank you, sir. And I must tell you right now, Ted Cruz wishes he were you. My God, he's got foreign parents and he was born here. I swear. And he's not going to get it. He's not going to make it. Senator, I want to call you Mike because I like you so much, but I respect you so much. I have to do the whole show calling you Senator, even though I know you're not, but you are in my
whatever works, John. Whatever.
Okay, sir. Then the question is this: you drove a cab, you worked on the railroad. How on earth did you ever become interested in politics, and why Alaska?
I was interested in politics from when I was 15 years old and on. And when I was about 17, 18, I read a book called The Anatomy of Peace by Emory Reeve, and thenceforward I became a globalist. Now, why I went to Alaska, I had been involved in politics wherever I was, helping others get elected. But obviously, I was hoping someday to run for office myself. And so in my last year at Columbia, driving a cab, I had worked on Wall Street before that. I did research and focused on two states where I might have a chance. I had no money. I had no parents with any name. I didn't want to go back to Massachusetts, which was run by the Irish and the Italians, and I didn't have a prayer there. So the two states I looked at was New Mexico and Alaska. Since I was born and bred in New England, I didn't like warm weather all that much, so I went to Alaska, and I went there broke. And 12 years later, I was sitting in the United States Senate. And my formula is very simple. Work hard and be lucky.
Well, you know, Senator, you were lucky, and America was lucky, as was the state of Nevada, because the senator you replaced, I recall his name was Gruning, and you know that the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, which was that fake, false flag that dragged us into Vietnam, only two senators in America voted for that, and that was Gruning, and that was Morse. So it was of I believe, Montana or Wyoming, but in any event.
Well, from Oregon, Wayne Morse.
Oh, yes, that's right. And I remember that from the time I was almost a kid. But the thing is that that state and this country were lucky that you replaced that man who voted against the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution. Did you ever meet him?
Oh, God, I was a protege of his and used to work. And I thought he was unbelievably a giant intellectually. And what happened was that in the election before, the 64 election, I ran, 68 election, I ran for the House. And I thought he was encouraging me to do that, but unfortunately he wasn't. And he was very angry that I ran. And so he tried to sabotage my campaign because at that time, the Democrats controlled all offices in Alaska. It was a Democratic state. And I advanced the thesis that, well, look at, and he was 83 at the time. And I was 38, and I felt it was time to change the guard. So I ran against him. I did not say a negative word about him during the campaign because I respected him. And I won because I was younger and offered a fresh face. But after I got elected, I became as much of an anti-war senator as he was, and more so because I was the one that released the Pentagon Papers at great risk to myself. In fact, I didn't know what would happen, whether I'd go to jail, get censured, get thrown out of the Senate. But I just felt it was very important to release these papers so people could know why we went into the quagmire of Vietnam and why four presidential administrations lied overwhelmingly to the American people about our presence there. And so the rest is history.
Well, you also stood up and filibustered for hours and hours, and you got the draft rescinded. My question to you would be, do you regret that there is no more draft?
No, I don't. But by the same token, I'm realistic enough to recognize that there's unintended consequences. And the unintended consequences at the hands of the Republicans was to institute a system where they would privatize major activities of the military. And so in point of fact, in Iraq, we had more non-government employees than we did uniformed soldiers. And that situation exists today. And that's part of that phalanx of individuals is made up of the CIA and other organizations that we subsidize to really alter the existing governments in the world. We are ruled, whether it's Bush or whether it's Obama, we are ruled by the neocons and the liberal interventionists. That's who runs this country and run the foreign policy. And, of course, they're running it into the ground to a fair
that, sir, that almost sounds like Chris Hedges. He wrote that book, The Death of the Liberal Class. The reason I asked you that question, sir, about rescinding and getting rid of the draft was my belief was always the war in Vietnam was ended because middle-class youngsters out of college were being drafted to serve overseas, and they were the ones getting killed. And the middle class, which was extremely large and influential in those days, resented seeing their boys coming home in body bags. So they took to the streets to demonstrate, and it erupted finally in 1968 in Chicago, as you well know. And, you know, there was that huge riot which started in Lafayette Park when somebody pulled the American flag down, and they found out later that it was a CIA agent who pulled the flag down to start the fight. Now what has happened, these people, as you call them, the neocons or whoever they are, they're truly smart. So they figure if they can't have an army that they can draft, they can only take in poor people. And so now it's the poor being killed in Iraq and Afghanistan and all over. I know three very bright young men, Senator, who've graduated from college, can't find a job, and they're going into the military. They could be dead in a couple of years. So maybe the draft should have, because if they could still draft white folks, white middle-class folks, maybe we wouldn't be in this quagmire.
Well, I don't share that view. There's no question. We should be a peaceful country, and we don't need the draft if we're a peaceful country, but we're not. We're an empire, and the leaders, the neocons, and the liberal interventionists, really tell us repeatedly that we're the greatest people in the world. We're not. We're no better than anybody else. And, of course, this is all to maintain American imperialism in the world. And now that we're the only, we're the hegemon. And we got a situation where it's very dangerous because the hegemon is being challenged by a country by the name of China. And the historic record is replete where when you have a superpower hegemon challenged by an ascending power, 12 out of 16 times it results in war, 4 times it results in a negotiated settlement. Right now, we are dangerously close to creating a war with China and exacerbating the situation with Russia. Here, with Russia, the American people are not stupid. But unfortunately, they've been lied to by the American mainstream media controlled by Wall Street. And so what they want, if you want to know a problem, follow the money. Who benefits from all of these military wasteful expenditures? Who benefits from war? It is the shareholders of the military industrial complex corporations. That's who benefits. Now, whether you got the war, now keep in mind, I would disagree slightly with your depiction of really what happened in ending the Vietnam War. The young people took to the streets because they were going to be drafted. They were the cannon fodder. It wasn't terribly the middle-class Americans, their parents. No, it was the young people who were at risk. They reacted. After they were no longer at risk, you haven't seen them since until you had the Wall Street movement, which was crushed like a grape by our military government. So, no, we don't need the draft. And as far as the volunteer army and the fact that we spend $600 billion plus on weapons that we don't need. We don't need new submarines. We don't need another aircraft carrier. There's nobody who's a threat to us other than the extremists, the crazies in the Islamic world who have been created by our presence in the Islamic world. That's who's causing us. As one general said, we're breeding more terrorists than you imagine by what we do in the world today.
Senator, you obviously watched the debates, the Republican and Democratic debates. Bernie Sanders is the only person whose personality seems to be peaceful. Like you were in your 2008 campaign. He is the most popular candidate on the internet, even above Donald Trump. All of the others, all of them, they all talked about increasing the military and were never challenged by anyone. So the question I have to ask you, it's obvious that Congress does not represent represent us. The Senate doesn't, neither does Barack Obama, the president, who's a lawn jockey for Goldman Sachs. What is, you've mentioned something called direct democracy in this terrific book, Citizen Power. Tell me about what you believe could happen in this society so that Americans could vote directly on issues and bypass their Congress and their Senate.
Let me tell you candidly, with respect to Bernie Sanders, he's the most unique politician I have ever laid eyes on or heard of. I may have met him in my past, I don't recall, but he's better than I was when I ran for president. Bernie has got an unbelievable talent and an acumen. He understands all the issues. He may be a little light on the foreign policy aspects of China, Russia, and Iran. But as far as understanding what this country needs to have happen, he is the savior. I know of no person in history since Abraham Lincoln with the Civil War that has even addressed the problem the way he's doing. Now, having said that, he's got all the answers. I don't have to add a word to his campaign rhetoric. But what I do have to add is something that he already acknowledges to a degree, but he doesn't have the answer. And that is and this is borne out by a recent comment by Noam Chomsky. And that is what Bernie is creating is a movement, not just support for his election. It's a movement that will get him elected. And I think that Bernie Sanders will become the next president of the United States. But as Chomsky pointed out, and as Bernie understands himself, once he's elected, how is he going to get his agenda through the Congress? The Congress may be half Republican. The Congress, even if it's not half Republican, the Democrats have demonstrated overwhelmingly their gutless wonders. And so how is he going to get this agenda through? There's only way he can get this agenda through. He has to be able to go over the head of the go over the Congress and go directly to the people. And the only way he can do that is with the National Citizens Initiative. This legislation that I've been working on for 25 years, and that legislation will empower people to make laws in every government jurisdiction of the United States, most particularly the federal government, and they'll do it in a deliberative fashion. And that's what needs to be put in place. And once Bernie has got beyond Hillary, which is going to happen shortly, then he can focus on, and that would be, putting his shoulder, taking his organization, because after he's elected, that organization, in order to stay alive, has got to have something to do. If there's nothing to do other than just protest, you know what a protest is by the people. What it's documentation. It's proof that our democracy doesn't work. That's why we protest. What we need to do is to have people empowered to make laws like their representatives. All the people can do today is to vote on election day to give away their power and then wait 2, 4, 6 years to try to vote again. And for a few seconds, they are in power. But after that, they've given it to the politicians. And so
Senator, though, you know, we elect, but the 1% select, we have nothing to say about it. And when you were running and you were so popular, you didn't get the media time and the press time that you should have gotten. And look what happened to Ralph Nader. He was arrested when he tried to show up at some of these debates to get on. Now, could I ask you a question about Noam Chomsky? Do you mind?
Please.
Okay. Now, I have all of Noam's books. He's the intellectual when it comes to American foreign policy. The biggest change in American foreign policy in history was the murder of John Kennedy publicly in Dallas, in Dealey Plaza. The next day, within 24 hours, Lyndon Johnson sent 50,000 troops to Vietnam. I have seen students stand in front of Noam Chomsky and say, that is the biggest change in American foreign policy, so tell us your thoughts on the assassination. And he poo-poos the question. He ignores the question. The same thing with 911, for crying out loud. Any idiot, even Donald Trump, has referred to the fact that Building 7 did not come down because it was hit by hot smoke, for crying out loud. When people ask him about that, because that foreign policy disaster resulted in Iraq and Afghanistan and more Americans murdered. There is something wrong with Noam Chomsky for not answering these questions.
No, there's nothing wrong. He's a human being like anybody else. And if you're looking for perfection in any human being, including Bernie Sanders, then you're on the wrong planet. And so that's not a reason to trash Noam Chomsky. He has the greatest memory of any human being that I've ever heard of. It's unbelievable. So take his work at face value and his contribution and don't try to add to it. He is what he is, and as far as I'm concerned, he's a great man. But what he's put his finger on, which is the same thing that Bernie's put his finger on, and that is that when you get elected, your movement generally disappears.
True.
And so what will happen to Bernie is he'll get into, to not use too crude a word, but he'll get into a pissing contest with the Congress, and this quarrel will go on, and people become more frustrated. What Bernie needs is a device to go over the Congress directly to the people. There's only two venues for change. One is the government, wherein lies the problem, and the other is the people. But the people do not have the procedures in place to properly legislate and to properly set policy. Like you said earlier,
you have been doing this, sir, for 25 years, and I must say it's a brilliant idea. Why is it tonight, looking and listening to you, this is the first time I've heard of it?
Oh, I'll tell you, it's because it's out of the box. And even I have yet to meet an elected official who buys into direct democracy. And I've yet to meet and persuade a major cause organizations, the ones that we love and applaud, that would even understand that the answer to our problem is to empower the people to be able to make laws. Because what the 1% have done, they've persuaded us that you can't trust the people. They're a mob. Well, I've never seen the people act like a mob, but I have seen the Congress when they passed the Patriot Act in 24 hours after getting a document in front of them that was over 300 pages. Nobody read it. They just voted for it. And so that's a mob. And that's the Congress of the United States that acts like a mob. And right now we're seeing them in their craziest phase.
When I was researching you and rereading your book, and I found a page that you have on the internet that was so, so interesting. It was a page that had every single subject on it, from the war on drugs, I don't want callers. Do you want to call her? Would you like to take a question?
That's okay. If it helps your program, yeah, we can take one or two.
Okay. Don, do me a favor. Put the first caller on the line, please.
All right. Is it me?
Yes. Who is me?
This is John. Budhead, a.k.a. Steve. You can call me Steve.
Okay, Steve, you're talking to
Senator.
All right.
I'd like to talk to Senator Revelle on a different page. On a different page, sir.
Go ahead.
You work for a company, or you're a general manager of a company, Cannabis Sativa Incorporated, which I own stock in. And I'm wondering whether you would be interested in coming to Pennsylvania and investigating the possibility of the Hershey Candy Factory becoming a Kush. I'm serious. I am really serious.
I know you're serious. I don't question that at all. And I'm not laughing at your seriousness. I'm just laughing at the fact that I'm 85 years old, and I'm really up to my eyeballs with cannabis sativa, and I've been working to make it work better, and it is going to improve. As you know, our call letters, or whatever you call them, are CBDS. But rest assured that things are going to get better in that regard. But as far as me going to the Hershey factory, I travel very infrequently, maybe go across the country once or twice a year at most, because I have neuropathy in my feet. I don't feel the bottoms of my feet, and I have a total back problem that's been operated on.
I refuse
to waste any more money from the Veterans Administration, who would operate again, because I don't think a person 85 years old should spend a lot of money getting operated on.
So Senator,
okay.
Does that answer your question, I hope?
Sort of. I appreciate your great service to the current country and to the company that I hold stock in. And I would hope at least to leave my phone number and possible contact information.
Give me your phone number. I'll write it down right now.
Go ahead, Steve.
It's 814-355-3919.
Steve, you're going to get swamped with calls.
I'll call you either right after the program, or I'll call you tomorrow because I'm going to see my granddaughters right after this program. I'll call you, and your name again is Steve, right?
Yeah. There's great possibilities in Pennsylvania. We have a bill in front of our state house right now to legalize medical marijuana. The Hershey Factory would be the perfect place to produce cannabis oil candy.
Let me tell you, the reason why I got in, nobody's ever invited me to be on a board, and they invited me to be on a board of Cannabis Sativa Inc., and I was flattered. But the only reason I got on a board is not because I use marijuana, and God knows I should use it, but I don't, but it's because I want to see an end to the war on drugs. This war on drugs is just like the prohibition of alcohol. It has destroyed this country and destroyed a lot of other countries. And so if making marijuana legal so that it can be regulated, and it's got to be regulated like we regulate alcohol, and we need that desperately because we're not entirely sure what goes into all of these products. And so if we can prove and show that cannabis is not a problem to the youth or the people of this country, then maybe we'll take the approach on all drugs. The drug problem is not a criminal problem. It's a public health problem. And the sooner we deal with it that way, the sooner we're going to empty our prisons of people that shouldn't be there, and we'll be able to address this problem of addiction, which besets all of us.
Speaking of the prisons, this is my very last question before we say goodbye. And thank you so much for that call, Steve. It was just absolutely wonderful. The question would be your reaction to the fact, because you brought it up early in the show, about the privatization first of the army. Now we have privatization of prisons in this country. And in Michigan, I think they just sentenced some judge to jail for 20 years because he was sending kids to prison and getting paid for it.
What else is new? This is the Republican Party which has gone from bad to crazy.
They would let Barry Goldwater in today.
That's right.
He was a radical. Senator, what is the page that I saw earlier on the internet that had all this wonderful information? All these categories. What's the page?
It's NCID. .com. The problem is I have not had the physical ability to keep up the website, but I can tell you, if I can turn this website over to the Sanders movement and let them go out and get this enacted into law by the people directly, we don't have to wait on the government to do this. We are a sovereign people, and we can enact this law straight away by ourselves, and that will empower the President of the United States, President Sanders, to go over the heads of the Congress to enact his agenda, which would be the greatest improvement in America in our entire history.
Well, Senator, I must tell you, you're a national treasure, and it really hurt me to hear that you were not feeling well at your age. You mentioned your feet. Do you have diabetes?
No, I have neuropathy, and I don't feel the bottom of my feet. Now, I am diabetic, but it's easily controlled because I'm not that far gone. But no, I've ruined all of the nerve endings in my feet, and that's called neuropathy. And then, of course, I had back problems where every one of my discs are squishing out. But I'm treated at the Veterans Administration, and I'm delighted with it.
I must tell you, sir, thank God for gravity, because it's taking the problems down to your feet, because nothing has affected that wonderful brain of yours or the magnificent mouth of yours. Where can folks get the book, Citizen Power?
Well, actually, if you will, you can get it on Amazon, I believe. It's Author House that published it. It's self-publishing. I've got a ton of them, and I'd be happy to let them go at a discount, or I give them away.
How can they get a hold of you?
Pardon me?
Well, how could they get a hold of you?
The problem is that I don't have the capacity. I've got no staff. Wait a second. I could give you the name of a person who's acting as my assistant. Her name is Anita Gallagher.
Okay, Anita Gallagher.
And she is. Let me get her email. Come on.
Have you got a phone number?
Yeah, I do.
Phone number.
Well, God darn it! What is it? You're taxing me. Come on. Let me get my phone out, and it's okay. Anita Gallagher.
And by the way, Don, are you still there in the engineering? Don? Do me a favor. When we say goodbye to the senator, don't run the promo or the break or the ads or anything. I just want to go right to Joe, okay? Well, we'll have to bring the senator back another time so we can sell his book, okay?
Okay. I'll send you this by email. I can't quickly find it.
Okay, Senator, you got a pencil and a piece of paper in front of you?
Yes, I have right now.
Okay, I'm going to give you my email address.
Okay.
It's John, J-O-H-N, Sarita, S-A-R-I-T-A, all one word. John
S-A-R-I-T-A, okay.
John Sarita at AOL.com.
AOL.com. Okay, great.
You send me a note. That's funny. Watching you fumble around there, you remind me of Walter Matthau in Grumpy Old Men. Anyway, well, Senator.
That's what people don't realize. I am an old man, and I don't have much staff capability, and so I fumble around as best I can.
Well, right now I'm at the stage where I have to valet my car, so somebody has to remember where it is. Anyway, I'm so delighted that you are here. And you must come back again in a couple of months to talk about the progress of the campaign.
I'll come back even earlier than that. Whenever you're ready to put me on, I'm available.
Oh, well, thank you so much, sir. Bless you. I'm not religious, but bless you. And okay. We'll talk to you again shortly. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, folks, we're going to bypass any breaks or anything like that. Gee, I wish I had a camera so that he could have seen me, because I was able to see the senator. He has the most beautiful face, white hair, white mustache, a beautiful smile, beautiful eyes, just an absolute delight. So anyway, maybe one day we'll be able to put this on the internet so everybody could actually see it, because he was indeed wonderful. Joe, are you there?
I am. Is the book Citizen Power, A Mandate for Change? Is that the name of the book?
It must be the subtitle of the book. And what I was going to do, because I know you're short on staff too, but if people call in and
hey, Dave, you don't have to get personal here.
Well, in any event, how are you? And how did your appearance on Tom Hartman go? I was so delighted to hear that you got that gig. How did it go?
Well, you know, this is a story called, the original title was The Mother of All Market Corrections, which is what I call climate change. And it turned into Mother Nature's Invisible Hand Strikes Back Against the Carbon Economy. And it was a story that when I was ready to, you know, send it in was 7,000 words. And I could tell you that Truthout did not want 7,000 words. So I had to get down to 3,500 words. And when I got on to Tom Hartman's show, I had to try and sum it up in less than 5 minutes. And you know how harrowing that can be, John, because you used to be on local news doing movie reviews, and you probably had, what did they give you, 2 minutes, 3 minutes to do your review?
Yeah, I'll tell you a cute story about that in a second. Go ahead, continue.
Yeah, so, you know, I used to be on the other end as a television producer, and a television news producer, and, you know, making, you know, you're looking and you're back timing and you're like, come on, buddy, let's keep it tight. So that's always in my mind. But hey, you know, I got as much in as I could. And I was all, of course, I'm happy to do it because I do think, not you know, shameless self-promotion here. I do think that this is an important idea for anybody. Just a little bit of full disclosure here. At the turn of the century, I had actually become a climate skeptic. I do know about solar radiation. I do know about the variance and the fluctuation of the climate in terms of geological time. My second wife, a wonderful woman, by the way, I'll never speak ill of her, was a geologist. I am a trained historian, so, you know, I did history of people. She did history of rocks. She taught me a lot about history of rocks. So I know a lot about the planet's lifespan and how climate changes and how things change. And so I was skeptical for a long time, but I've done a lot of reading and I've definitely come around to the overall consensus, which is about 98, 99% of scientists who are on board with this. And I think that the interesting thing to point out is that if you believe in free markets, it's actually not opposed to the idea of climate change, because really the reason why oil and hydrocarbons have come to dominate the planet is not because of its glorious victory in the free market. It's because of cronyism. It's because of a chronic misallocation of capital. It's because the system is rigged, and the massive amounts of subsidies and preferences and tax breaks that go to big oil, including, and I consider a subsidy of big oil, the U.S. defense budget, because the only reason the United States is spending $500 million right now to rebuild and expand a naval base in Bahrain is because of oil. It's not because Americans love Bahrainis.
Okay, so one of your news vandal today is really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Tell me the thing about Walmart. I mean, they're closing a couple of hundred stores. And the heading for your story is just terrific. So tell us why you put that in the news vandal today, and what is it? Expand.
Well, I'll tell you why, and it does actually have relevance to the election, which we have to talk about, John, because, you know, it really is, like, for me, this election is Disneyland. I've been following politics since I was a wee child and a wee lad, and, you know, now that you have the front runner for the GOP saying in an event publicly, I could go into the middle of Fifth Avenue, shoot somebody, and still my supporters would follow me, and celebrating that fact just tickles me to no end. I'm sorry. There's just something unbelievable about this. And you mentioned Sarah Palin. It's the gift that keeps on giving. But there is a tie-in here to the election, because Walmart is sort of the example of what happened to the American economy writ large. Hillary Clinton was on the board of Walmart at the end of the 80s, the beginning of the 90s. And when Bill Clinton decided to run for the presidency, she left the board of Walmart. Interestingly, Bill and Hillary lorded over Arkansas, and the home of Walmart, the corporate headquarters of Walmart, was also Arkansas.
Oh, that's right.
And you'll remember, I know as I bring back those ancient days, because this is another time when a billionaire came into the system and threatened the two-party system the way Donald Trump has done. The United States was the presidency was being contested between primarily Perot, George Herbert Walker Bush, and Clinton. And among the issues on the table was George Herbert Walker Bush's handling of China relations in light of Tiananmen Square. As a matter of fact, within weeks of Tiananmen Square, George Herbert Walker Bush, who had been ambassador to China, had been the CIA's ambassador to China is the way I consider it, but had been ambassador to China under Nixon, sent Brent Scowcroft there to shake hands with the leadership of the Chinese. And this turned into a huge issue inside the Republican Party as well as the Democratic Party. And on the campaign trail, then candidate Bill Clinton said, "I will never extend most favored nation status to the Chinese because they are the enemies of democracy." And guess what? As soon as he got elected, he extended most favored nation status to the Chinese. It was a yearly review process. He pushed it through every year until his final year, when he got the Congress to approve permanent most favored nation trading status with the Chinese. And I'm going to tell you who the primary beneficiary of that was. It was Walmart, because Walmart went from a very strong regional powerhouse to the nation's largest employer. Nation's largest employer. And what was that predicated on? Cheap Chinese labor making plastic widgets in China, shipped back to Walmart. Well, what's happened now with Walmart is they're closing 154 stores in the United States, about 200 plus stores, maybe more. I think it's more globally. They're going to lay off about 10,000 workers. And it's because I believe the American market is saturated, the global economy is in deflation, and China is the ultimate canary in the coal mine.
Why would you call China the canary in the coal mine?
No, no, Walmart is this canary in the coal mine.
Oh, I see. Oh, my goodness.
Because that's the interface. You know, one thing about America, and I think I've mentioned this before on your show, is, and this is not a slight towards poverty in America. I've been poor in America. It's tough to be poor in America. But if you look at real poverty, poverty in India, it's much different than a lot of the poverty in America. Now, people will be living out of their cars, right? You'll have a family of four living out of their cars in the wake of 2008. But they have a car to live out of. And you see what I'm saying? The availability of cheap plastic goods in America, you know, America is a place where some poor people will actually have a big screen TV in their home.
You know, what it is, it's like Will Rogers joked during the recession about how lucky Americans are that they have a car to drive to the poorhouse in.
That's it, right? And that's, you know, Americans, you know, I have been poor. I know what it's like to count dollars at the checkout line at the supermarket and wonder if you're going to be able to buy all the food. I get that, folks.
Yeah, but get this, Joe. I mean, listen to this. Senator Gravel says, admittedly, he's tried for 25 years to get this People's Initiative put through in every state in the union so that the people can outvote the members of Congress and the Senate. And it's not happening, and that's 25 years. Now you have all these stores being closed by Walmart. I must tell you that America will collapse economically before any initiatives are passed that could stop that collapse.
My operating thesis on the U.S. economy and the global economy is that the global consumer capital system or capitalist system ended in 2008. It takes a long time for these things to play out. The Roman Empire didn't fall in a day. It fell over the course of a century. And I think that it's over. It is absolutely over. And the only thing that has sustained the American system and the global system is that the Fed has had free rein. And remember, the Fed is the interface between Wall Street bankers and the American government. You have a number of people from Goldman Sachs. And oh, by the way, the head of the European Central Bank, Mario Draghi, he used to be at Goldman Sachs. In addition to the four or five people who are on the governing board of the Fed here and then regional banking system, because, you know, the Fed is broken up. You have the Atlanta branch and the Minneapolis branch and the Dallas branch.
It's all still a private bank, and we never hear anybody talking about it. Let's get back to the business of politics, because Senator Gravel said some absolutely wonderful things about Bernie Sanders, and you have a wonderful article in your News Vandal today about Bernie in Israel. It's complicated. Expand on that a little bit and why, because there are a number of people. I have hundreds of friends on Facebook who like Bernie, but they're nervous about his support of Zionist Israel.
Well, this all goes back to a campaign event, a town hall event that he had in Vermont at the time of the last Gaza war. That's when the Israelis were wholesale bombing Gaza. And one of his constituents got up and challenged him on Israel. And Bernie got really angry and told that I think it was a woman, told her, sit down. And, you know, he really lost his cool. And that turned into kind of a negative signal to people who are in favor of equal rights for Palestinians. Because I don't think, John, is there any way to call it anything else to call it? You know, legal equality, equal rights.
Exactly.
Right of self-determination. Because I personally.
It's statehood. It's statehood. Right.
Well, no, you know what, John? I actually think Israel needs to grow up. They need to annex the West Bank and Gaza, give all Palestinian and Israeli Arabs equal rights under the law inside Greater Israel, the way the United States, Britain, and everybody else has had to do with the people they've colonized. If you want to grow up as a democracy, you have to take the people who you have subjugated and the people that you have exploited, and you have to eventually give them equal rights under your law and give them equal access to the political and economic system. That's what, because there's never going to be a two-state solution. It's never going to happen. It's time for the Palestinians to get the right to challenge the Israeli legal system when their olive groves are destroyed, when their houses are destroyed. They need to be able to vote and put members of that represent them in the Knesset, and that's something that the Israelis also don't want to do. So that's sort of the catch-22. But back to Bernie. So that sent a signal to people who are generally in favor of advocating for the Palestinian cause, a negative signal. But here's the thing. Even though he lived on a kibbutz for a while, which is one of these things, it's really the sort of the heart of – used to be considered the heart of Israeli and Jewish humanism, where you would go live on a kibbutz and it's sort of a collective farm, and it's almost communism really is what it is. It's sort of a socialist – a utopia that happens where all the people work
that's,
on the.
That's what Jesus was.
That's what Jesus was, right?
He was a communist. He belonged in a sect called the Essenes. There was no private property.
That's right. And as he said, a rich man has a better chance of passing. A camel has a better chance of passing through the eye of a needle than a rich man does of getting into heaven. Sorry, Donald. I know he loves Jesus, or he says he loves Jesus, but Jesus.
That was funny. Okay, speaking of Donald and Bernie again, it seems to me that we are going to have Donald Trump representing the Democrats, Bernie Sanders, and hopefully Liz Warren representing the Democrats. These are two candidates that the entire country wants, whether you're for one or the other, but everybody who's going to vote wants these two. Except the 1% who own the government.
Right. That's Bloomberg, right? I mean,
that's Bloomberg. So now, how does the government go about stomping all over democracy and not allowing either Trump or Bernie Sanders to take the oath of office?
Well, John, I don't know. And you, I think you said one of the most trenchant and insightful things in your open. And it's something that I believe wholeheartedly, and it's something that I've been talking about with Chuck Ocelli on The Ocelli Effect. If Elizabeth Warren is Bernie Sanders' running mate, he can win the White House.
He will win.
It'll be
2-1 over Trump.
Because, John, is there anybody held in higher regard in public life than Elizabeth Warren?
No, and even though she has questionable views on Israel also. But the point is that that is the one slight downside to Liz Warren. But Hillary Clinton has no upside.
None.
None of the Republicans, except for maybe Trump, have no upside.
None.
So, and again, I've said it many times, Donald Trump does not have a heart. He should be in the Wizard of Oz.
He's the
going up there with Judy looking for a heart. But Bernie comes across like a decent and peaceful man. He is, you know, because Trump was kicked out of both schools because he wouldn't listen to anybody. Imagine if a Bay of Pigs came along. He doesn't want to hear from anybody. If he wants to push the button, he'll push the button.
Well, and I'll just say this. This is me talking just as a sort of personal thing. I think Bernie represents the reestablishment of one of the great traditions in American life of the 20th century, and that's activist Jewish humanism, where Jewish humanism was part of establishing the union movement. It was part of the civil rights movement. It was part of the anti-war movement. He represents a return of that in contraposition to the neocons, that Mike Gravel was talking about, who have hijacked American policy to engage in all kinds of wars. That is not Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is about heart and people. And I don't know if you saw the ad, John, that they're running now in Iowa, I believe also in New Hampshire, where they use Simon and Garfunkel's "I'm Out There Searching for America." It's really beautiful. And the irony is it's sort of a triumph of the 60s over the 80s, because Donald Trump is the 80s.
It absolutely is. And you know what? I love that expression, Jewish humanism. But his commercial is great show business.
It's great show business.
All the other commercials is absolutely dreadful. And, you know, look at Jesus. Joshua Ben Joseph was his name. Okay, that was his real name. Joshua, the son of Joseph, a Jew. And billions of people worship this guy as the son of God. But then look, he wanted to improve the world. Mm-hmm. Karl Marx did not wish to become a dictator.
Nope.
He wished to change the corrupt capitalist manufacturing system in the British Isles and in Europe because of their exploitation of workers and children.
Yep.
He meant to do good. That's what the revolution was all about. The revolutionaries in Russia, it was all about trying to improve the world. And what a lot of people don't know is that for 5 years, the United States, 5 years following the revolution in 1917 in Russia, for 5 years, the United States, Germany, France, and England sent troops in there to murder the Russians to stop the revolution. And it's never taught in the schools.
No. And, well, the question is, here's the thing. If you want to get into Marxism, which I'm happy to do, Russia was the last place on earth that Marx thought the revolution would happen, because Marx was not an advancing industrialized economy. It was basically a medieval economy with serfdom. Serfs had just been released from the land, you know, 20 years before the revolution started, 20, 30 years. It was not supposed to happen. It was supposed to happen in Germany. It was supposed to happen in England. And in a sense, Russia became kind of the misdirection against the impending Marxist revolutions that were starting to happen on the continent, and it was sort of foisted on. There are a lot of people who wonder why Lenin was put on a train and allowed to go to Russia to organize the revolution.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely. So your prediction then for the outcome of the election?
You know, as I said to somebody today, I'm more of Quincy than Cassandra. I'm afraid I'm better at autopsies than I am at predictions, because
Is so funny. That is brilliant.
I'm strapping in, I'm getting a whiskey, and I'm going to enjoy it.
Well, you know, you mentioned the fact that you were a news producer and you had to squeeze stuff in for time. I was on Channel 4 when Salvador Allende was murdered by the CIA, initiated by Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon, because he was going to socialize AT&T and Pepsi-Cola. Okay, it was like a 15-second announcement on the news, and then on comes their weather girl, Kelly Lang, and she's doing 3 minutes on the weather. They had come to me. I was thrown out of the newsroom twice, and this was one time they came down and literally dragged me out of the newsroom because I'm supposed to do a review. And I'm so outraged with this, and I'm not interested in politics. And then when they come on the air to me and I say, hey, I tell you something, folks, if you really want to learn something about what we are doing to Salvatore Allende down there in Chile, for crying out loud, send Kelly Lang down to San Diego and let her do her weather report for 3.5 minutes. The weather is not news. Open the goddamn window and you'll find out. And well, they rushed in and dragged me out of the newsroom. Anyway.
Oh, John.
Oh, God. It'll all be in the book. Anyway, I must tell you, Joe, it is a delight to have you. Listen, doing this show is for me like going to college. I mean, I never even... I dropped out after the first year of high school because I found out my father wasn't coming home. So I thought, why bother going to school? I dropped out at 15. So anyway, I feel like I'm getting a college education every time I come on the show because of people like you and Senator Gravel. Anyway, where can they get your news, Vandal, and when are you going to appear on Chuck again?
Just email me, info, at newsvandal, N-E-W-S-V-A-N-D-A-L, newsvandal.com. You'll get the rundown 5 days a week. All you have to do, folks, is read the headlines. You don't even have to click on anything. If you read the headlines from top to bottom, it'll take you about 7 or 8 minutes. You will know more about the news than most of the people who are telling you the news.
I must tell you, folks, he's absolutely right. It is totally, totally brilliant. It is the best newsletter in all of America. And before I say goodnight on this Monday night, I would suggest you go to johnbarbersworld.com, click on the video icon. You will see a lot of stuff that you really love, and especially if you're interested in knowing everything you need to know about the murder of John F. Kennedy.
You're here.
What you can do next to help solve. We've solved it. No, we just got to prosecute the people who were involved, and a lot of them, like Dan Rather and Bill Moyers, are still around. Anyway, thank you all so much. Thank you again, Joe, for a wonderful, wonderful show. And
ciao.
I'll be in touch with you during the week. And good night to all of you.
You're my spark of nature's fire. You're my sweet, complete desire. A sunny, 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 I love you.